Much for being here this morning. We are thrilled that you are with us and hope you'll stay around just a little longer. We have a couple of people that like to sing me songs, because whatever song the sermon brings up in their heart, they like to sing it to me on their way out. And one of the two, after last week's sermon, sang a song that has a, I'm not going to sing it to you. But has a line in it that said, one week later, it's an interesting song that has nothing to do with Jesus, but one week later. And I thought, that's what I want to preach on Sunday. So last week we talked about open tomb. And this week I want us to talk about one week later. Okay, my job has morphed a little bit. I've always done the preaching and teaching. That's always been part of my job. But one of the things that my job has kind of morphed into is how do we help those who have questions? And that has gotten out. And I don't know if that's good or bad that that's gotten out, because not only has it gotten out among our church, it has gotten out among your friends that don't go to our church. And one of the friends of one of our people came to me a few weeks ago and said, I've got questions. And my friend tells me, you've got answers. And I'm thinking, great. They want to know about baptism and how we do our music and why we have the name that we have. And I'm ready for those questions. And so we decide we're going to meet over a cup of coffee. And the question starts with, I'm mad at God. And I don't know if I believe in him. Okay, this is going to sound weird. I'd rather have those questions than questions about why we practice things that we do here. Not because I can't explain why we do things that we do here. I can do that just fine. But there's something about someone searching, and they're looking for answers. And what we have tended to do is we have looked at those who are searching and who have doubts, especially if they're already believers, and we have maybe, quite possibly, if we didn't say it loud, we said it quiet, what's wrong with their faith? And I think we need to amend how we say that. The more I've thought about this sermon over the past 6 days, the more I have thought that I need to have some doubts. That I need to have those moments in my life where I've got some serious questions. And in the midst of having those serious questions about God and faith and what it means to believe and what it means to follow, I need to be able to find the safest place to ask those questions. And what safer place to do it than with the rest of God's people, who I think have answered some of those questions. I love what Bryce said, and Bryce told our story, and I'm so grateful that he told the story. But Bryce said, you know, I relate to Thomas because he's been there. And the truth is I think all of us probably relate to Thomas because we've been there. Let me just give you a couple of situations from the story of the Bible where doubts have tended to occur. And what I want us to do is, instead of hiding our doubts and instead of saying, I don't ever doubt and I've got this great, concrete, strong faith, I want us to be honest about them. Because the characters we're going to see are going to be honest about their doubts. You go to Genesis chapter 16, and it doesn't take long. In Genesis 12, God has said, okay, Abram, look up at the sky, see the stars. That's going to be your descendants. And Abraham looks back at his little house, and all he sees is his old lady wife. That's not very nice. I'm going to hear about that one from Sarah when I get to heaven, probably. All he sees, and she was a beautiful old woman, because that gets him into trouble later. But he looks back, and all he sees is Sarah and her handmaid, Hagar. And so he looks at his timetable, and he looks at God and says, this is what you promised in chapter 16, and nothing's happening. And so he and Sarah and Hagar concoct this plot to get a son, and the son will be Ishmael. And that's going to create a whole different dynamic for the world, really, up until this day. But Abraham had a different timetable. Have you been there? Have you had those moments in your life? Like, I don't know if you're like me, I have my life structured out literally by months. And I can tell you exactly what I'm going to be doing this month in this year at this time. And I've got everything lined up. And I know that's OCD in me. And so I apologize to those who live fancy free. I can't live fancy free. But I got everything lined up. And every now and then God throws a little wrench in it and says, the map that you've got lined up, I don't like that one. And maybe you just need to hold on a little bit. And his timetable and my timetable don't always agree. You keep reading the Old Testament and you get to Exodus chapter 3 and you get Moses. And Moses is one of these great stories that they write movies about, but yet we don't preach about it maybe as often as we should. And Moses has been kind of raised within Pharaoh's family almost, and we imagine he's gotten the education that Pharaoh's children would have gotten. And then he goes to the defense of an Israelite, and before you know it, he's running out of town to hide. And 40 years after he's been run out of town to hide, a bush lights on fire. And out of this bush comes a voice that says, Moses, you're going to deliver my people. And in the midst of that conversation between Moses and the bush, he says, there's no way I can do this. I'm not good enough. I'm not well-spoken enough. I don't have the right talents. It's a task that is beyond what I can do. Okay, my guess is there have been moments in your life when you faced an overwhelming task. Maybe God blessed you with a child that needed a little bit more attention. Maybe they were rowdy. Maybe they had other things going on in their life. And there have probably been moments when you've sat in your chair and you're rocking that baby and you're saying, I don't know how I'm going to be able to do this. There's no way the two of us can handle this child. Or you've had a job and the boss just keeps piling stuff on you. And he says, I need you to have this done by the end of the week. And why don't you do this as well? And the tasks just keep growing and growing. Or maybe you're in a marriage that is on the rocks and you look at it and say, there's no way we can get it back. It's impossible. It's an overwhelming task. And so your doubts start to creep in. Maybe you're like John the Baptist in Luke chapter 7, and John the Baptist is now in jail, and he's been in jail for a while, and he sends his disciples to Jesus, and he sends the disciples to say, are you the one? Because for whatever reason, John is there, and he says, is this the promise? I mean, we're cousins, and I kind of grew up knowing that you were the Messiah, and you were going to be the one that was going to deliver us, and I stood and I preached about you. When is this going to happen? And it's this idea of sometimes there's a question mark. Or maybe the story of Mark chapter 4, where the disciples are on a lake that they're off and on. They're on this little Sea of Galilee, and the waves start to crash, and the disciples say, don't you care? Sometimes doubts come when our life is threatened. When those moments come where we don't know how it's going to work out and how things are going to get fixed, and maybe it's a health crisis, or maybe it's a job crisis, or maybe it's a relational crisis, or maybe we've had some in this room who've been held up by gunpoint. And when you have moments like that, do you have some questions? Okay, I've got a really good friend that I went to college with who's got some questions right now because their house was robbed, and in the midst of their house being robbed, they're saying, why would God do this to us? And he's got some doubts. And I'm glad he calls his friend to say, I've got some doubts and I've got some troubles. Help me work through them. But for a moment, his life was threatened, and in the midst of that moment, it's like, where's God in this story? Or maybe you've watched someone suffer. Mark chapter 9 tells this vivid story of a boy who's just suffering. And the dad comes to Jesus and he says, here's my story and here's my boy's story and I don't know what to do anymore. Help me believe. Okay, usually that question comes in hospital rooms. And usually that question comes in the ER. And usually that question comes when we've got a kid who is sick. But the whole point of the story is when those moments occur, I think it's okay that we ask a question or two. And I think it's okay that we say, why is it my child that's sick? Why is it me that's dealing with cancer at 40? Why is it? And we fill in all of those blanks of those around us who are suffering. And I think it's okay to ask those questions. And we've got to convince ourselves that our doubts are not the end of the story. Or maybe you've tried to attempt something extraordinary and you failed miserably. Okay, this is going to show a bad side of me. I hate heights. Most of you know that. But every time someone does some crazy stunt where they walk between two high rises in New York or Chicago, I want to watch. Because I keep thinking one of these days the guy's going to walk and a gust of wind or a pigeon is going to land on that pole and he's going to fall down. And I want to be there to say, well, that was dumb. Sorry, I just got in trouble with some of the moms. I've never once seen those guys attempt something extraordinary like that and fail, which is probably good. But I know there have been moments in my life when I have attempted something extraordinary and completely blown it. And I thought what I was attempting to do was God-ordained. And yet it collapsed right in my face. Or maybe you've got some doubts every now and then when your heart's broken by grief. And I think that's where the Thomas story fits in. Because the Thomas story is Thomas is broken by grief. Okay, kind of like Bryce, Thomas is one of my favorites. Here's one of the other lines Thomas has. In John chapter 11, during the story of Lazarus, so they're on their way to go resurrect Lazarus, and they've piddled around a little bit, but finally they're on the road there, and Thomas doesn't really get what's going on, and he says this, "Let us go too, so that we can die with him." Okay, whatever we're going to call Thomas, most of the time he gets that label Doubting Thomas. This idea of Thomas saying, if Jesus is going to Bethany, then let's go with him, and if it means we got to die with him, let's go and let's die with him. That here is someone who is committed to the cause. Thomas is not some wavering disciple who keeps going back and forth between, should I believe in Jesus and shouldn't I? He's willing to give up everything for Jesus. And then Friday happens. And in the midst of the crucifixion of Jesus, and in the midst of the story of the resurrection, Thomas gets labeled Doubting Thomas. And I wish we would change that. I wish we'd go from Doubting Thomas to Honest Thomas. Because you and I can be just like Thomas. Maybe it's not the same questions. Maybe it's not the same context. But there are moments when I have looked up to God and I have said, I don't get it. And this isn't the way it was thought out to be, and this isn't the way it was designed, and you said you would always be with me, and you said, and you said, and you said, and we've got these hundreds of questions. Thomas only had one. I don't believe it, and unless I see it, I'm not even sure if that's a question, as much as that's just a statement of where Thomas's mind is. So you get Resurrection Sunday. Resurrection Sunday, they've gone to the tomb early in the morning. The women have seen it. They've come back. Peter and John have raced to the tomb to see who's in there. They've come back and said the tomb is empty. Jesus comes into the room with 10 of them, minus Thomas, minus Judas, with at least 10 of them in that room and says, peace be with you. And he stays for a little bit, and then he goes. And Thomas is somewhere else. I have no idea where Thomas was, and I don't know if I could even answer that. It seems that the 10 disciples are hunkered down, and my guess is they're hunkered down and they're afraid, and they're hunkered down in the same exact room that a few days before they had done the Passover meal in. Just their little gathering place. It's their Airbnb for the weekend. And in the midst of that, Thomas says, I didn't see it. And so we get a story. Let's just read it. Bryce has told it. Let's read it. Now, Thomas, also known as Didymus, okay, Didymus does not mean doubter. Didymus means the twin. So now Thomas, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, we have seen the Lord. But he said, unless I see the nails or the marks, sorry, I need either new glasses or stand closer to the screen. Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand to his side, I will not believe. A week later, His disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." And then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here, see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it to my side. Stop doubting and believe." And Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Okay, my guess is most of you know that story. In fact, I kind of looked back at my notes. I've preached the Thomas story a couple of different ways, a couple of different times. It's one of those great stories that calls us to be honest with our doubts, that calls us to admit that it's all right to have a question or two. So here's a couple of key points that I think come out of this story. It is natural to doubt every now and then. Okay, what happens is when we have people who doubt every now and then, we sometimes think of them as less spiritual. Okay, the truth is it doesn't make you less spiritual, it makes you human. Because when we have those moments of questions, and when we have those moments of wondering, why is this going on in my life, or in the life of my family, or in the life of my child, or with my workplace, or fill in all of those blanks, it just reminds us that we join a host of other people who've had the same kind of questions and who have yearned for answers. Because the truth is it's natural. If we didn't have doubts, okay, this might sound blasphemous, but hear me out anyway. If you haven't had doubts about life, I would wonder how genuine your faith is. If you haven't had those moments when you just frankly said, "I don't get it, and tell me why," I would wonder how close you are with God. Because the truth is life is not this grand thing that is pieced together exactly how we planned it. It's full of curves and bumps and sometimes cliffs and everything else. And in the midst of that, if we don't have those moments that bring up a question, because those questions are usually what then validates and strengthens the faith that we're supposed to have. If we don't have those questions, I would wonder how deep we were in our relationship with God. The second point that comes out of the Thomas story is God gets it. God understands our time of doubting. What I find interesting is, with maybe the exception of that last line where he says, "Stop believing," or "Stop doubting and believe," there is no condemnation put on Thomas. And I don't think that line, "Stop doubting and believe," is really pointed at Jesus in this mean way. The other day, someone came to me and said, "What if I ask that question? Is God going to strike me down? If I ask this question," and they won't tell me the question yet, "if I ask this question, is God going to thunder and lightning me? Is God going to say, 'Forget going to church because you don't got a chance anyway'? Is God going to look at me differently?" And my answer was, "I have no idea what your question is, but no." Because even in the midst of this story where Thomas is doubting the key point to our Christian faith, the resurrection of Jesus, there's not condemnation put on it. And I think, if anything, it's a tender moment between Thomas and Jesus. That I think this moment where Thomas has got legitimate questions because he's got to see it with his own eyes and feel it with his own hands, and Jesus understands our human nature, and he gets that we have problems every now and then, and he understands that there are moments where we're weak and we have doubts, and he says, "Here's what I'm going to do. Here I am." And it's this moment between the two that I think when we get to replay it in heaven, we're going to have tears flowing down our faces, because it's not going to be Jesus pointing a finger. It's going to be Jesus meeting him at his very place of doubt, which is the third point. It's God meets us where we are. Okay, 1 week later, same room, in his own time, in his own way, God shows up. And he's going to do that for you. And you're saying, "Well, you don't get it. Here's what's going on. And here are my questions, and here are my concerns, and here is my wondering, and here is all this stuff going on in my life." And I want to tell you, even in the midst of that, when you're stuck in a tree of crazy, I want you to know that God's going to meet you at your very greatest point of doubt. And that he's going to be there just like he was for Thomas. In his own way, he will meet us. But then the last thing is when we see those doubts, sometimes the only thing we can do is believe anyway. I've debated whether I wanted to share this story, and so I'm going to do it. There was a point in time when I was your preacher and who stood before you every Sunday, and I wrestled with a ton of doubts. I would preach from this Bible that I'm holding in my hand. It's been the same Bible for a long time. I look back, the sermons were just fine. They were biblically accurate. They were in tune with what God says, and I would preach the same thing again if I needed to. But I don't know if I believed them. I would preach about a God who loves, and I would preach about a God who is more than willing to extend mercy, and I would preach about a God that forgives, and I would preach about a God that does all of these things, but in my own head, even while I was preaching those sermons to you, it was, I'm not sure I believe all those things. And what do you do when your preacher's got some doubts? Now, he faked his way through it, and there were only a handful of people who knew what was really going on in that poor preacher's head, and there were only a handful of people that could help walk him from one place to another. And to this very day, one of those guys is my very closest friend in the world outside of Nikki. But a period of doubt hits all of us. Even the one who sits at his desk for hours on end with a Bible in his lap, the doubts come. And one of the things that I was convinced of by that good friend who is still the closest friend I have outside of Nikki was, you've just got to believe even if you don't get it. And here's what they did, and I find it kind of annoying. He walked over and he flipped off the light switch in my office. And he said, "Do you believe in electricity?" And I said, "Of course I do. You just turned it off, you idiot." Sorry, that's two bad words I've said. Man, I'm going to get hammered by some kids. Did you see it? Did you feel it? Did you do the wiring? Did you? And he asked all of these silly questions that, of course not, just believe it. That was a, oddly enough, a turning point in my life. Because there are moments when there are moments when we don't get it. There are moments when we're sitting with a sick child that we don't get it. And there are moments when we're laying in bed with a spouse where the marriage isn't what it should be. And we're wrestling with all the doubts we can have. And there are moments we're sitting in hospital beds. And there are moments when we're at a graveyard. And there are moments everywhere else in between where we say, I don't understand it and I don't get it and I can't figure it out. And this isn't the way I planned it. And how could you let this happen? And we ask 100 questions. And I want to tell you, it's okay to ask the 100 questions, but when you get done answering the 100 questions, you may get a few answers, but you may not this side of heaven. So I just want you to flip the switch. Okay, easier said than done, I know, but there are moments in our lives where we have to do what Thomas finally did and just believe it. Believe that God is going to bring deliverance. He may not bring deliverance like you want it, but he's going to bring deliverance. I keep a prayer journal. At the end of each day, I write down the stuff I want to make sure I give to God. So just for fun, I thought I'm going to flip back through that prayer journal from 5 years ago. So everything's digital now, so it's so easy to go back. So I went back 5 years. Okay, this is going to sound bad when I say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'm going down the list and said, they died, they died, they died, they got a divorce, that kid still hasn't come home, they died, they got a divorce, they still haven't found a good job. Hold on a second. Did God deliver? Okay, in the ones where it was the little, they died, they died, they died, they died, God delivered. And I've got to believe that. And I've got to believe when I've sat there at funerals and I've sat there around a table and I've sat there at a grave and we've watched a casket go down, I've got to believe that God's going to deliver. And maybe he didn't deliver the way we had prayed, and maybe he didn't deliver the way we wanted things done, but he delivered. And I'm not going to figure all of that out. And to be honest, if we got a God that we can figure out, is he really worth worshiping? And so we believe it. Or as we said last week, we faith it. And we walk this journey by faith that says, even if I don't get it. Okay, let's go back to our young person that said, I got a million questions. The final question over our cup of coffee last week was, what if you're wrong? Okay, what if this whole Jesus God thing is nothing but a fable? I love that question. I said, hasn't hurt me. Okay, if we get to the end of this life and like Rover, we're dead all over and that's the end of it, having the peace that you don't have matters. Having the relationships that you're struggling with because you're not practicing things the way God has called me to do it matters. Having the friendships, and not just friendships where we go to a ball game or we play a round of golf, but having friendships where in the middle of the night I can get on the phone and say, I've got some questions. Even if all of this turned out to be some fable, which I in no way believe it is, it's still better than the alternative. And so I believe. When I don't understand it, when I've got 100 questions, when I can read my Bible over and over and over and not find an answer to my problem, I just believe. That last line that Jesus gives, blessed are those who have not seen. Okay, my friends, that's all of us. None of us have been like Thomas and had Jesus stand right in front of us. None of us have been able to reach out and touch. Whether Thomas does that or not, I have no clue. But Jesus says, blessed are those, even in their doubts, that they believe. Okay, I want us to be blessed. And us to be those people who believe even if. Probably my favorite contemporary Christian song is a song called Even If. And I won't sing you that song either. One of the lines is, even if the healing doesn't come. Okay, I want to tell you, even if the healing doesn't come, even if the job doesn't turn out to be what you wanted it to be, even if you have those moments with a sick child or a prodigal child, or even if your marriage crashes and burns, or even if, and fill in any other even if God is still there. Take a step of faith and just believe it. Ask the questions. Ask those who you know who've got questions. Ask your elders and your preachers and your people who work among you. Ask them. They're not too ashamed to help you find an answer. But the bottom line is just believe it. I think we'll find on the other side of heaven, it will be more than enough. So if you've got questions, great. Bring them. And if you've got sorrow, bring those. And if you've got answers, be ready to help somebody else. But if you need us for anything, I'm here. Elders are all through the room. The best people I know are surrounding you. Ask somebody. I promise they'll help you on your journey. So let's stand and let's sing the song Wayne's got.